Blog Talk Radio. And welcome, but not quite.
Here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this.
Uploaded the wrong one.
So that would be why I couldn't find it.
No. I have a better version, but for some reason I uploaded the wrong one. So there you go. Next week we'll try again on opening song, American Bandstand. It makes about six of them we've had in the last 2 months. And then a listener has cared, because there are no listeners, because we're talking to ourselves. Welcome to Soma Time, the weekly voicemail we leave here in the cloud.
Really, radio masturbation.
Well, you know what? If there's no cleanup, I'm all for it. So whatever. I mean, I'm at
the
point
now. Come on, I'm punchy, man.
Well, punchy. I'm at the point now where I need a little counseling here.
Mm-hmm.
Are there things that make you angry?
That's right.
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been another one of those weeks. We changed the bunting again this week, if you notice. It says Summertime Beyond the BS.
Yeah.
There's a lot of BS to get beyond this week.
Really? I haven't noticed.
Yeah. I mean, it's piling up outside. I've actually got to the point now where I've passed physical exhaustion. And I've passed the point where the nerves are fried, and I'm feeling like, you know, when you look at the food when you're cooking in the microwave and it's spinning around, and you know that food is just the chemical bonds are just bursting inside of it, and with it all its nutritional value.
Yes.
I kind of feel like this is happening to my intellect. My intellect is being cooked alive.
Oh,
I just feel like, well, here's the game. I mean, I must have signed up for three or four of these. Like every year, beginning of the year, if you're a solopreneur like me, solopreneur, you're a coin flipper like me, you get a lot of just offers in your inbox every day to let's just say boost your business. All right. Now I've been in this caregiving line for 18, 19 years now, wherever it's been, and it doesn't matter what the economy says. There's always been people that are suffering, and someone a long time ago said your job title is two sentences: to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. That's it. So doesn't matter what the money says. I mean, there's always going to be someone out there that needs help, right?
Uh-huh.
And you get these offers in the inbox, and basically they're promising you streets of gold, usually. And if you do this, this, and this, and that, Our good friend Michael Port has opened up a network now that he has successfully duped every solopreneur on the planet with his Book Yourself Solid rap. Which consists of doing a very, kind of generic little marketing thing. And then he wrote a book called The Contrarian Effect that undoes everything he did in the first two books. So it's not going to work. Try this. And now he has a network where you can get advice from these people that are going to make your head spin, that, you join for free for a month. And, of course, they amaze you with all their backflips and little circuses they perform for you to help your business out. So I got that.
You filthy criminals.
That's right. Well, I didn't think of it that way, but there's a lot of them piling up on the tip of Manhattan, I'll tell you that. They keep rounding them up down there. I get that. Then I get the one for how to make a lot of money selling an ebook. Now, we've had ebooks. I am the king of ebooks.
You are.
I know things. Yeah, I'm an ebook fool.
What does your crown look like as the king of the ebook?
It's one of those ones you tape together at the birthday parties. Yeah.
Kind of like the Burger King ones?
Yeah, actually, yeah. That's it. I got a couple of those later on. That's right. So that's tomorrow. Actually, they're having it right now as we speak is the first meeting, but, of course, I couldn't attend it because I'm here talking to you.
Right.
So they have it again tomorrow at 3 o'clock, but I'll be on 684 traveling south along with my future. So I'll have to get the tape delayed version, which, of course, will be scintillating. Good podcast fun for me.
Yeah,
and they're going to, you know.
Nice for your bank.
Yeah, it's the same old deal. It's the same old process. So you out there, my ideal audience, my target, my niche, the people I'm trying to leverage, the humans that allow me to do my best work, man, call me here, 646-478-4847. Who are you? Declare yourselves. We've really gone through.
You're being possessed by John Adams now? What the hell is going on over there?
I've had it. I've had 18, 19 years of digging through this pile. This needle in the haystack doesn't exist. There are no ideal clients for what I'm doing. I'm talking Soma here. And we should come up with like an urban dictionary of what Soma stands for, from sit on my ass to, you know, shape of my attention, you know, some of my my aggravation, whatever. You know, I really feel like people think of it as a word like scuba, like it must stand for something. You know, and the thing is that you can't have a service that defines a word. That's it. Thank you. Come again. We'll have another word tomorrow. Yeah. So I've spent the most part of the winter trying to figure out how to connect this dopey show, which no one listens to a website that no one goes to a store that no one buys anything from while I'm working on the ground.
Hey, consistency is good.
Except that
kind.
I swear to God, there's probably 5 or 6 guys that are right now locked up in Bellevue about 10 miles south of me doing the same thing, and they're probably more successful at it.
Oh, brother.
Because, you know, I found a website this morning that was basically a guy figured out how to make internet millions, by creating a website where people put captions on pictures of cats.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
IEatACheeseburger.com or something like that. Or I think it's called LaughOutLoudCats.com. I don't know. I could tell you. It was the guy we want to interview for the show. The first guy gave me the link for. His website is whatever his name is, and then it says Business Ninja.
You got to be kidding.
No. Great stuff. And his websites are funny. I mean, the thing is like, I think we really have to get to the point where we haven't downloaded it yet from the Batman movie last year when a guy says, why so serious?
Yeah, that was great. Hey, you want me to play a little bit of that Christian Bale rant? It's pretty funny.
Sure, I can deal.
All right,
like, no one's listening, so.
Well,
if you object to what we play, you can call us here at
646-478.
Yeah, call us here at 646-478-47.
And
we'd like to know if we offended you.
We're going to hang up on you, but call us anyway.
Yeah.
We like to do that. All right, let me see if I can get this to play. What's
sure.
happening is that one of the techie guys...
Now you're just filthy and vulgar.
One of the techie guys walked onto the set when he was doing his thing.
He was acting.
Yeah, so he pulled a billow on him.
All right.
All right, let me see if this will work here.
Oh, wow, I got there fast.
Kick your fucking ass! I want you off the fucking set, you prick! Now, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I fucking walk around and rip that? No, shut the fuck up, Bruce. Do I want... No! No! Don't shut me up! Am I going to walk around and rip your fucking lights down in the middle of a scene? Then why the fuck are you walking right through? Da-da-da-da, like this in the background. What the fuck is it with you? What don't you fucking understand?
This goes on for over 3 minutes, so I'll cut
about,
it short.
Hey, it's fucking distracting having somebody walking up behind Bryce in the middle of the fucking scene.
blimey.
Give me a fucking answer.
What's that?
I said blimey. I was just
trying
to chime in.
What don't you get about it?
Oh, yes.
I was looking at
it. Oh, good for you. And how was it? I hope it was fucking good because it's useless now, isn't it? Fuck's sake, man, you're amateur.
It goes on for the longest time.
McGee, you got fucking something to say to this prick? Well, somebody should be fucking watching and keeping an eye on.
Well, I mean, this is one of the things that you know.
Oops. Oh, I just pressed something. Oh,
what did you do? What did you do?
I don't know.
You lost it.
I did. Now I don't even see it on here anymore.
Wow.
There was a second one that was put to music.
Uh-huh.
You're going to crack up when you listen to it. They did a great job.
Well,
3.5 minutes of that.
I'm sitting here saying to myself, whatever movie he's in, I got to go see it now, just to see what this guy pulled off, because obviously he's, you know, he's a couple of blocks short of going postal there.
Man. Didn't he sound a lot like Bill O?
Well, he sounded very under control. Like he sounded almost like it was, like he wasn't having an effect on the dude. He was hurling the words out there. You know, well, it's an exo having a fit. It isn't like natural for him.
Yeah, and he was saying stuff like, you know, you're a really nice guy, but we're done.
And his crime was walking on the set during the shoot or something?
Something. He was checking
the
lights.
Yeah, something that was going to hurtle us into the sun if he didn't do it. Yeah.
Right.
Wow. Well.
Well, I sent you the link so you can, you know, later on when you're bored, you can listen to it. In its entirety. But you got to listen to the song. It's very nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds, you know, it's another one of those internet viral things. See, this is what entertains you guys. You know? Miles and miles of this.
The fuck you bullshitting me for?
That's right.
Because it's
all we like is, yes, the thing is that's been the lion's share of our show, is little snippets like that, interlaced with scintillating interviews that we're going to be starting here in a couple of minutes. And I'm just sitting here, wow, it's the first week of February here. We've done, I think, 4 shows now since the new year. Maybe this is the 5th one. I don't remember anymore.
Yeah, it's got to be at least.
I think it's the 5th one, yeah, because we did the New Year's show was actually, it should have been on the 31st, and then it had to be on the 1st because the stinking thing wouldn't upload it when I was taping it or whatever. The great night of radio fun for me. And then, you look at the pattern that we went through. We had the one Lie to Me show at 10 o'clock. That threw me off. That's why. We really didn't do a show to speak of that night because we ended up on at 10 o'clock and you were half dead and there's nobody there. So that's what happened that week. But I'm sitting here, okay, we're meandering into February now. And you just wonder what the heck it is that people want to hear. I mean, if you go to Blog Talk, any given time of day, there's always going to be 3 basic topics, right, pretty much. There's always going to be some psychic doing something.
Mm-hmm.
There's like woo on the hour.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, people
think
for some reason people think psychics are more believable over the phone. I don't understand it, but they love the psychics. Everyone's astrology, there's the psychic, that channel of this, you know, woo on the hour. There's always something political, and there's always something in the radical black community.
Somebody's always pissed off about something.
Yeah, I don't know what they're mad about anymore. They got everything they want, and now they should just you know, put on some hip hop and relax, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Number again, 646-478-4847. We're trying to find the threshold for reaction. If you have made like a public accident and clicked on listen to the show, then you know we're here. And basically, what we're trying to get at is, there's a heck of a lot of BS that's running around in your head, and our job is to point it out to you. So this week, we actually nabbed the guy that sat down long enough to write a book, something I haven't been able to do in the last 4 or 5 years, and I'm pretty much running out of patience in trying to do it. So we interviewed this guy because he's summed up something that in both mine and Professor Val's travels, we've come across in the special needs community. that he kind of tagged it. I like the word. He calls it alphabet disorders. So the book's called Alphabet Kids, and it's about how all these labels are affecting the growth and development of these children and their families, actually. And he was affected by it directly himself, his daughter being an ASD kid. What he did about it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got the whole backstory. What came out of it was such a good, strong reaction that his wife actually went ahead and formed a charity for the families, because one of the things with special needs is that, you know, it involves everybody else, the siblings and parents, sometimes the extended family, especially when you're dealing with severe situations. And it isn't just, autism and things like that. It also involves eating disorders and depression and all kinds of fun things. And then when you get to the gifted and talented end of the spectrum, they have problems too.
That would be Rex. He was gifted and talented.
Really?
Yep.
And we all know where that led.
Yeah, right here.
That's right. Straight to the laptop. 2 bits. And he goes into those things and how it's actually his strategy is interesting, is that rather than trying to fight the system, he has devised a way to advise parents how to beat the system by allowing your kid not to be labeled once, but many times, because a lot of these disorders are commingled. And so if you get labeled with one label, you might not get services that would help you with, say, another label, like a PDD versus an ADD or whatever. And his mindset is to get labeled by as many of these things as possible so that you choke the system by its own bureaucracy, pointing out its inadequacies, and then, of course, you get to skate through all the little filters they set up for you because, as I was told myself, and he kind of gave me the same impression, special needs, at least in New York State, is set up just like workers' comp, where the state and the institutions are on one side of the coin and you're fighting it. So when you go into the school system, the public school system, they have a budget, your kid has a number over his head, and it's independent of the needs and services that he or she's supposed to get. And your job is to find a way to beat the system, and he recommends hiring a...
That's why the educational attorneys exist.
Yeah, that's what he said. At the end of the interview, basically said hire someone who's a professional, child advocate, and you can get around that because they rely on the fact that people will just get their leg weary from pushing against the system over the years, and the way it works is as soon as you make any progress in the system, they take services away.
Right.
You know that which is completely backwards, but you know that's the way they're wired because they're trying to keep their budget down.
Mm-hmm.
And it, meanwhile, they have to justify the existence of special needs. So every kid gets like they try to bring them in around $100,000, and where the public school kid, the mainstream kid, the high functioning LD kid, low ASD spectrum order kid, who's put in the mainstream because he's only showing those deficits in certain areas, and basically he's functionally illiterate. He gets about $8,000 to $12,000 a year in terms of his budget for the school. So there you go. All right. So without further ado, we'll play at least until we get bored. The interview we did the other day with Robbie Wolliver from Alphabet Kids. Take it away, Robbie. Hello.
Hang on.
Okay.
I can't find him. I know he's here. So, oh, here it is. All right. Here we go.
Yeah. Okay, joining us now is the author of the book Alphabet Kids, Robbie Wolliver. Thanks for taking some time out to discuss your book with us, Robbie.
I really appreciate you inviting me.
Okay, now, you got into this, and from just kind of sketchy outlines, because you're not like in one central place on the web. You're sort of all over the place on the web. Kind of trace your origins, because you've written about this stuff extensively in the past. What inspired the book, and what kind of galvanized it for you? Because it seems like you have a lot of oars in the water with this issue.
Right. Well, I was first interested in it because of my daughter, who had some developmental issues when she was younger. And it was just something that I had to research because I was finding out that the doctors that we were going to were a little less informed than I was, and I was barely informed. So I had to start researching the subject myself, and it's just a fascinating subject to me. And I'm the editor of a newspaper, the Long Island Press, And I started writing stories for the Long Island Press on different subjects involving children's developmental issues. And it became a series called Our Children's Brains. And the reaction we were getting from parents around the world was just extraordinary. We never got as much email about stories. We never got as many phone calls. And they all had the same theme, basically, oh, my God, that's my kid you were talking about. You know, we did stories on auditory processing disorder and autism and childhood depression. And people were really responding to it. And then we started winning awards for our stories, and we realized, you know what, there's a great interest in this. So, you know, I took my interest in trying to help my daughter, my interest in the subject, my interest in helping other parents, and I decided to write this book, basically as a guide for other parents to have an easier time in their journey than I did.
And again, speaking as a special needs dad, and also being, you know, a clinician too, the murkiness of going through this process, especially when it begins early on, when in the more severe cases, my child was diagnosed, I think, with about five different things, from charge related because they couldn't pin it to his genetics, to PDD because he had heart problems. There's so many labels as you go through that are a sort of a shorthand. On the medical side, on the allopathic side, to sort of, you know, kind of pinpoint, you know, what's going on with this kid. And then you get to that gray area, and this is the sort of the oxymoron, early intervention.
Right.
When a kid goes through early intervention, I always get scared because that's when they're going to start sucking the kid down that quicksand into special needs. And they start to divide and conquer the family, in a sense, because you have the education system that has one objective, and then you have the healthcare system, which has a completely different objective. And what happens is that they start to play a little game of cat and mouse with the therapies and how this kid's going to get support. Did you, as going through from all these things that you said, you found a lot of these, as you call them, alphabet disorders, are commingled, that they share certain parts of the neurobiological spectrum, and then certain things are more cognitive and behavioral. How did you get past that 3 to 5 year old window developmentally to navigate? Because the parents get completely bewildered of, well, why isn't this covered, and how come I can't have speech therapy now? How come you can't teach the kid speech therapy when he has issues with his diet? And it just gets very kind of gray there. How do you get past that part, the early intervention years?
Well, part of the problem is that a lot of these doctors don't look at the holistic nature of the child. They'll see that the child has obsessive behavior, so they'll say OCD, or they'll say PDD, which is the autism spectrum, and they only see one area, and they usually ghettoize what they see. You know, they won't respond to things that are outside of, you know, their field. And what my advice to people is, well, first of all, I believe in early intervention. I think it's crucial. And you just have to have the right early intervention. And early detection is even more important, but that has to be the correct diagnosis. So I tell people, if you have one of these disorders, and they're all commingled, and the term is comorbid, as you know, and it's a horrible-sounding term, but it just means that these are all, you know, simultaneous disorders. And if a doctor only tells you that you have one of these things, that your child has one of these things, and this goes for adults as well, because a lot of these disorders are genetic or inherited, if they tell you you only have one, go see another doctor, because usually you don't have just one. If a child has ADHD, they very often have anxiety problems too, which is just common sense. You know, so many of these disorders really are under other umbrella disorders. So I have, you know, it's funny because I have mixed feelings about labeling these kids with these, you know, this alphabet soup of disorders, because on one hand, it's very important to get the correct label. But you know, I feel like if being labeled with 26 different alphabet disorders from A to Z helps a child obtain needed intervention and services, it's worth it. But with more and more children...
Anymore, that's what I think the system is. The system is just a game of having the right... you know, it comes down to the way these things are managed from a fiscal standpoint. It's definitely when it comes to state programs or when you're dealing with autism that has all these issues, that there's a spectrum of it, is that the labels give you permission to get to see the doctors, to get the help. So if you don't have the label, you can't get in the door.
Right.
So you got to almost change that, yeah.
And again, the whole purpose of the book is to get the right label. Because if you have the wrong label, that's not going to help anybody. But there are people, there are parents who will take a wrong label in order to get their kids services that they wouldn't be able to get. And so many parents go to their doctor and say, I'm telling you, there's something just not right with my kid. And you know, I'm almost more concerned with kids who are mildly affected by some of these. And remember, it's not just one, but mildly affected by a number of these disorders, because those are the kids who fall through the cracks. You know, a kid with severe autism, a doctor will know they have severe autism. You know, and you know, this book covers a whole slew of, you know, psychological, developmental, and neurobiological disorders, physical disorders, psychological disorders, and all of them are connected. And the key is to get the early intervention, the early detection, and the right program in school. And in order to do that, you have to have those right labels.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think the system has really, like I said, we started off talking about how healthcare and education sort of kind of crisscross each other in early intervention. Once you get to the elementary school education, now the game changes a little bit. Because, of course, in the mainstream, they always divide mental and physical education. And so you get the kids that have asthma and allergies and stuff that they can't do certain activities in gym class. And then you get the kids that have issues with speech and they got to be taken out to go to the speech therapist. These mainstream kids.
Right.
And when you get to the point where you're dealing with kids 9, 10, 11 years old, I see it a lot because I consult sometimes with the local youth coaches here for soccer and things like that that are dealing with behaviors that are related to social types of disorders, where you're dealing with kids that tend to be violent, or kids that tend to be, they have the auditory processing problems, so they have to wear the monitors and stuff. See, a lot of these kids now, I mean, when I grew up, you know, child of the 60s, you pretty much had two sets of kids. You had the mainstream kids and the kids that just were excluded, and you never saw them. I mean, I think in my high school, maybe there was 12, maybe 15 kids in the special needs program, and they were basically locked down in a dungeon somewhere. You never saw them.
Right.
And
you know, it's funny.
Now, yeah.
I was going to say, I was having a conversation today with Evelyn Ain, who's the president of Autism United, and we were actually talking about her child, and we were talking about my nephew, and they both have similar similar development in autism. They're around the same age. And we were talking about how these kids are whizzes on the computer. And, I mean, they could do things on the computer that I can't do if 20 scientists, you know, were explaining it to me. And we were saying how before computers, these kids would have been locked away. You wouldn't have known how intelligent they were. It wouldn't have brought out the real child. And it's just amazing how times have changed. And you're absolutely right. You know,
it's one of the things we got into before was that they don't understand this. My wife's an educator, my sister's an educator. I've done some health education over the years. Is that you're educating an individual? And I kind of started a policy with my son. It was called the JPEG rule. Because these kids acquire a rap sheet, very similar to someone who's a teenager that's a juvenile delinquent acquires a rap sheet
right.
with their special needs paper trail, and they tend to educate the paper trail, not the child. And so
let me tell you the opposite end of that, though, because when we first brought my daughter in, she was under 2 years old, and
mm-hmm.
she just lost her speech, and mm-hmm. at one point they said, you know, we did it. we've done everything we can, but now you have to do this through the school. And I kind of held back because I didn't want to get caught up in that whole special education maze. Little did I know, like, what would end up happening. And I'm sorry I didn't do that because I should have done it. And, you know, it, as you probably learned in your experience, it depends on who you're dealing with. I mean, there are some people in special education who could care less about your kid. You know, and they care more about the budget. And that's the biggest problem with special education, the budget and the money. But there are others who become devoted to your kid and really, you know what the problems are, know how to deal with the problems. And, you know, it's the same with doctors and it's the same with parents. You know, I truly believe that a parent has to become an advocate. And it's one thing I say over and over in Alphabet Kids is they have to become the advocate for their kids. Mm-hmm. Because nobody else cares about the kids the way they do. Nobody understands the kids the way they do. I interviewed parent after parent who kept saying that they would go to the doctor and say something was wrong, and the doctor just would never see it, and then they would find out that the child had a severe genetic disorder. You know, so even these genetic disorders, which are like black and white, are misdiagnosed and missed. And, you know, it's getting to know these, you know, thousands of terms. You know, it's a child who, you know, gets blue or who acts up every once in a while. That's not the kids we're talking about. I mean, kids, when it affects the child's daily operation in life, that's when it's a disorder. That's when the child is disordered. So, you know, these alphabet disorders make sense if they're the right ones. You know, when I first started writing this book, I mentioned to my daughter that I was doing a book like this, and she was a preteen then, and she joked around that, you know, she wanted to contribute a disorder for her then annoying brother. And she said, let's call it explosive personality disorder, or TNT, which to me, you know, I said, oh, funny joke, that's great. And then 2 weeks later, in my research, I see EPD, explosive personality disorder.
So it seems
like everything has a disorder, has a name. And again, if it helps define how to help your child, give your child 40 of those names, you know, but then find that doctor who can take all those disorders and give them like a holistic umbrella, you know, whether it's PDD, NOS, or multi-system disorder, you know. So
it's a unique approach, because what you're saying is that the system is so screwed up and so bogged down in its own bureaucracy and hyper-budgeting, and basically the trickle-down effect to the individual family is that they have to navigate through this maze just to get the services they need to get their kid properly assessed. And then once the kid is properly assessed, to move through and make sure that you're going to continue to receive services, because, of
Correct.
Course, danger, I've experienced it in my own travels with my son Kyle, is that as the kid progresses, every time the kid's reevaluated, they repeal the services. Oh, okay, no more PT. Okay, no more speech. The kid's doing okay. No, the kid needs to learn. No, we'll take that away. So it's a strange animal where the budgeting has a ceiling. So, you know, one of the things I do every year, because we work directly with the New Rochelle educator that runs everything, the supervisor, and I don't deal with the intermediaries anymore because my son keeps making these positive gains and they keep taking away support. So
right.
We just come up, it basically comes down to a horse trade. If you can get your kid budgeted in a special needs program for around $90,000 of services, and that includes busing and all the other stuff, all the other ancillary services, whether they need an aide in the room, whatever it is, you come in around $90,000, they'll give you anything you want. They try to keep the kid capped between around $100,000 and $120,000 a kid, and if you can come in with a little, just take about, you know, 10% off of that, they'll do whatever you want. And the thing is that we found that there's a lot more pork in this stuff, because when they go through the needs list during these CSC hearings in the spring, which is the annual rites of passage for my family, to see if the program's working, to go back to September and see if the kid has made his goals. There's not a lot of accountability in special needs because they don't expect these kids to change. I think
right.
The stat is like 4% of them ever get mainstreamed. So it's the black hole of education. It's the black hole of healthcare. And what happens is as these kids become teenagers and they're sort of at the end of the program, you know, they're gearing them up for, you know, for hanging coats at Salvation Army. They're not giving them any life skills, really.
Right.
They've been babysitting them for 10 years. And the large part, the families look at this, and I don't know what your travels were through SEPTA during the creation of this book. But one of my problems with SEPTA is that they're very drug happy in the sense that they're always trying to find a better drug, a safer drug, a more effective drug.
Right.
Instead of dealing with the behavior on its raw level and looking at things that, like, especially when you're dealing with kids that have problems with concentration skills, simple stuff like breathing. I mean, biofeedback, things that are non-invasive. Did you find in putting together the resources that the parents are leaning on the system or relying on it too much, or are they trying to fight the system and trying to maybe, renew it a little bit?
I find that most parents, and especially the parents that I spoke to for the book, is that they do fight the system and that they are fighting for their kids and they are advocating. And there are parents who have had very good experiences. I mean, there are parents who are, you know, still, with all the knowledge they have, having bad experiences. And I could almost guarantee, not knowing your specific example, but knowing that you're an expert in your field, I bet that you've even gone into your CSE meeting all prepared, knowing what you're going to say, plus having the knowledge from your own background, and then becoming completely overtaken and overwhelmed by the meeting. And that's what happens to a lot of parents. And one thing I'm finding a lot is that parents do not want the parent representative in their meeting, because that's somebody who's usually trying to get their own gains from the district, so they're not going to go against what the district says. But again, mm-hmm. you know, it depends on the district. I have to tell you that my district has been great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we've had our trouble with them, and every once in a while, like some clueless person will come along. But you know, parents really have to understand what all these terms mean. And you know, although I mostly talk about, you know, disorders in the book, I also talk about special ed a lot. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, with my son, who's older than my daughter, when he started, he was gifted. And they couldn't keep up with him in school. And one year they put him in an inclusion class, and I had no idea what that inclusion class was. I just didn't like the sound of it, and we pulled him out.
Now, do you cover that end of the spectrum in the book?
I do, yes. But what I found since is that inclusion classes are probably some of the best things for not only the special needs kid, but for the other kids. They're getting an extra teacher in that class. So, you know, people have to become aware of the terms, you know, what's available to them. And there is a lot available to them, but they have to fight for it. And then, you know, you talk about fighting every year for new modifications and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
New support. Mm-hmm. There are so many parents that I've talked to who get all the support they need, but then the teachers don't follow up. You know, so
like
you know,
I said,
every
it's a very unaccountable system. It's actually modeled after, someone whispered this to me once. I think it was at during early intervention, that oxymoron was that the whole system is modeled after workers' compensation. Where if you've ever been in a kangaroo court, that's workers' compensation, where the insurance company sits on the side of the judge, and you go in there and you have to prove you're injured. You have to prove your kid is in need every time. And like I said, the system is set up where they'll my kid was saddled with, I think, 21 different goals in a given academic year. And the goals were very amorphous, like sit still and wait for the bus, like a trained dog, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. that's not a goal. That should be an expectation. You know, it's like, so we got it down about 7 goals. And my kind of take on it, and we'll wrap this up, is that if you can get some congruency between what the kid is being assessed at home with the specialists and all the professionals in the field and with the educators and all the support staff, if everybody's looking at the same 5 or 6 things and they're all talking to each other, then your quarterly meetings and your CSE meetings go smoothly. When everybody's on a different page, Yeah, even just something as simple as ADD can be defined differently in 17 different ways with all these different therapists that are assessing it. You know, one's looking at the brain, one's looking at behavior, one's looking at cognitive stuff. So there's all the hands on the elephant. So it's like, that's why I think the labels ultimately are oversimplifying in one case, and also they're complicating things for the families, because again, they're the ones that have to sit there and try and, you know, spend their nights on the internet trying to figure out what the heck it is this kid just got tagged with, because it's going to direct them to different professionals, and it might lead them to, you know, more red herrings and blind alleys than when they could have just got backed up and took, like you say, a more holistic approach and say, okay, let's look at this kid, you know, on every level here and come up with a kind of a way to get a handle on this guy, because otherwise it seems like you chase a lot of leaves and you miss the tree, you know, you don't get
right
to the root of the problem.
You know, one of the things that I say in the book is that you go in, you know, how many parents, you know, I say like alphabet kids are like snowflakes, like no two are alike. Mm-hmm. They have a little bit of one disorder. They have a touch of another. They have a dash of a third. You know, you pick one from column A, you pick two from column B. And so many parents who have, you know, their life pretty much in turmoil because they have a kid, you know, going to a diagnostician's office with their kid, holding a list of six or seven, you know, diagnoses, and they leave with like, you know, like a list of, you know, 20 different things: ADD, OCD,
yeah,
APD, you know, and
right,
you know, it just goes on and on. And you know, first of all, why are these kids getting all these things? Second.
And it also doesn't take into account the cultural barriers, because sometimes you have, I encountered this a lot in SEPTA, you know, a lot of families that English is not their second language, it might be their fourth language, and so they don't understand anything that's going on. They rely on the system too much, and the system becomes a babysitter for these kids, becomes almost like a free daycare service for 10 years. The kid doesn't get assessed properly, just gets floated through the system, and like I said, You could take all three layers. You could take the special needs community, you could take the mainstream community, you could take the gifted and talented community. They're all a mosaic. They all have highs and lows and peaks and valleys. There just seems to be a lack of understanding of how to properly assess these kids. And I've seen a lot of parallel education programs. I think of Brain Balance. You might be familiar with him out of Long Island, and some of the other ones around here, that are looking at things on a developmental level. So do you see ever in the future where we get the science and we get the art of this to sort of synergize, so we have a common philosophy here of advocating for this kid to, you know, to progress on a point that the family can understand, or is it just like going to be a?
I do see that, but let me just end off that conversation about special education, because one other piece of advice that I'd give parents is, don't take this on yourself. Hire an advocate. Hire a legal advocate to do this for you. This way, you're not going crazy. This way, you're not struggling for information that you don't really know. You're not antagonizing the school against you. Hire a legal advocate, and there are many of them out there. I'm on Long Island. There's a couple. Doreen Cordova is a great one on Long Island. So that's a really important piece of advice for these parents. You know, they don't have to do it themselves. Just hire the advocate. The advocate usually wins the case, and you'll get the services you need for your child. To answer your question, I do think, you know, I think as more and more of these disorders become prevalent, and especially, you know, with the autism spectrum becoming more and more pervasive, parents are becoming smarter. And they're not taking no for an answer. They're doing their research. I interviewed parents who became research scientists. You know, they were housewives, and then they went back to school and they became research scientists. They became doctors. They became lawyers just to help their kid. So it's more and more of these parents of more and more of these children. You know, it's one in six children who have what I call alphabet disorders. And I mean, that's according to the CDC. Many experts think it's one in four, but even one in six is an incredible amount of children that you're dealing with. And you know, as more of these children are diagnosed and misdiagnosed or undiagnosed,
And I don't think diagnosis
the
is
parents
the parents.
The parents are going to force an answer, and as they're doing now with autism, you know, they're forcing people to look at this in a broader way, in a more holistic way. You know, I mean, some parents are desperate, but, you know, less parents are forcing their kids to take drugs, for example, for ADHD now, and you know, they're
even vaccines. There's a zillion layers of this. We're running out of time here, but
right.
One of the things I wanted to get to before we close, and I'll just wrap this up, we've been talking with Robbie Wolliver, author of Alphabet Kids, is that part of the things that's starting to emerge is that we're starting to back up and see that, okay, we acknowledge there's special needs kids here, these Alphabet Kids, but there's also the family and the siblings that are along for the ride, so to speak. And your book's inspired a new organization, a charity, yourdayaway.org. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that before we close up?
Each one of the chapters there, I have 70 chapters for 70 different disorders in the book.
Wow.
Ranging from autism to ADHD, OCD, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome. I mean, just 70 of these things. And many of them are interconnected, interrelated. Some of them overshadow other ones. So the top one gets noticed and this other one doesn't. And I address a lot of things like girls not being properly diagnosed, especially quirky girls in the autism spectrum, or boys not. I deal with eating disorders. A lot of boys, they don't realize, are anorexic. People don't realize that there's a passive form of ADD. You don't have to be hyperactive. You could be zoned out and quiet and have ADD. So, each one of these chapters starts with a profile of a real child. Some of them are heartbreaking, heart-wrenching. Other ones are very familiar. People will recognize even their typical children in some of these stories. But some of these parents just broke my heart. And, you know, I talked to my wife about it. You know, I would tell her about, you know, a certain story. And they're all fascinating. You don't have to have a kid to be fascinated by the subject. I mean, you know, the
effects, like you said, one in six families, you might have a neighbor or a relative that's in this spot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's your neighbor. It's your coworker. It's your grandchild. It's your friend's kid.
This charity gives these families a chance to get away for the weekend.
It gives the parents a day of respite. We offer support, other forms of support. And it's around the world, and on November 15th, we kicked it off in 60 areas around the world. And in Egypt, while the parents were all at a resort, they sent their kids camel riding at the pyramids. You know, they went on a cruise in Hawaii, and in New York, they went to Broadway shows. And you just wouldn't believe the intense need for this kind of thing. And the most telling part about it is, like, days before the event, it's now an ongoing daily event, and people could go onto the website, yourdayaway.org, and sign up as volunteers or, to volunteer services or to, you know, be one of the parents that we, you know, provide their wish for. But a few days before the event, parents started canceling because the kids were in the hospital. Or this one mother, she was recently widowed. And she has a child with a really devastating genetic disorder. And she had the lift in his bed broke. So she had to spend that weekend with him, lifting him out of bed. And so it's just heartbreaking. So it was great to be able, we provided about 600 parents around the world with this service, and it was great. So now we're doing it. It's a daily, ongoing operation. And it's been called like a make-a-wish for parents.
That's a great outcome for writing this book, and I wish you luck with that. And thanks for joining us here on Soma Time. And anyone who wants to pick up the book, it's on Amazon. It's Alphabet Kids. Robbie Wolliver has been our guest, and you can check out yourdayaway.org if you're in contact with one of these families. If you're a professional, you want to contribute, of course, hop on board. This is a big boat, and rowing it has become a cultural priority. So. Thanks for all your work you do, and thanks for joining us here on Soma.
I really appreciate it, and it was great talking to you. I appreciate you having me. Take care.
Take care.
All righty. Hang on a second. There you go. You were, for some reason, muted.
I was muted?
Yeah.
Well, I muted my own phone.
Well, not on here, on the switchboard.
Oh. Oh, so you didn't hear me just come on just now? Okay.
No.
Whatever. Well, we did have a caller in the middle of that that interview that strangely hung up as soon as I called him back. So let's try this. I'm going to dip out the other line, see if I can get him back, and then if I get him, I'll put him on the conference line here. Because on this show, we have to actually call our own callers. That's one of the rules. Every time we get a caller, we have to track him down, go to his house to interview him. So let me just see if I get this guy back.
Okay. All right. Well, while he's gone, let's see. I hope he didn't get disconnected. Although I wouldn't be surprised. Let's see. What could we play? We could play some. Oh, we haven't heard this in a while.
A credit crunch.
Do we miss McCain?
Are you there?
Yes.
Yes, hello.
Okay, we got our caller here. We called him back.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Justin Steinberg. I just was just wondering, does having a special needs child, especially one that has been quote-unquote labeled, that's been put into an inclusion class, sort of limit them and their abilities to grow outside of what they should be able to do?
It depends on the class. Some inclusion classrooms are great, and some are not so great, and it depends on the kid. So there's no one answer for that.
Well, what kind of a label we talking about? Because I know they like to separate the Asperger-y kids from the rest of the herd, usually.
Oh, that was one of the ones that I was actually thinking of to begin with.
Yeah, it's one of those things because again, there's very little understanding of the way informal learning happens in special needs. They tend to try to get them into uniform environments because, of course, anything that happens out of the ordinary, it makes them fly off the handle, and they try to control the environment too much, if you ask me, and as a result, it's almost like the way they treat the asthmatic kids in the mainstream, where they can't play gym class, and they can't accelerate their heart, because God forbid, the asthmatic kid gets reactive. So it's one of those things where the label creates a liability, not so much that the label does anything per se to the kid, but it makes everybody else act like, you know, they got to be on eggshells around the kid, and the kid develops, you know, an identity based on that. So in the sense that there's a direct correlation, I don't know, but, you know, we're sort of from the school of entrainment, and whatever you put in that person's environment, they tend to adopt as their own. And so, you know, if you're told as an asthmatic kid, you're not supposed to exert yourself, and you can't play sports, you know, you just develop as to say, I'm not athletic, you know. Same thing with the Asperger kid. Oh, you're not good with social. Isolate the kid until the kid learns, hey, maybe I'm not too good with other people. So I think there's definitely a mirror there.
Having written and implemented programs for Asperger kids, the reason why it was done is because they were having way too much anxiety in a regular classroom, and they did need the cues, you know, 5 minutes to the next class, 3 minutes to the next class. If they didn't have that, they were anxious and miserable all day. So there's that other side to that.
Okay. Can something for Dr. Mark, your simple help the special needs child to not be as anxious between classes, or to at least to deter certain anxiety issues for the child?
Well, simples is doesn't discriminate. We've done simples with people that have no ability to move their limbs, and it helps them. So yeah, simples is just like brain gym or any other one of these entrainment exercises. It just gets you to use both sides of your brain, both sensory and motor system coupled together, and it gets you to center your attention. So in that sense, it has a generic benefit on everybody. But specifically working with special needs kids, seeing as I work with one every morning from 6 to 7, it's got a dramatic effect on their ability to basically control their physiology and kind of steer their own awareness a little bit, because a lot of times when they have that glitch in the way that they're designed, the way that they're set up to process things, they tend to kind of uncouple those areas of their system, and it affects their performance.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right, answer your questions. I mean, we're so fascinated to have a call that we don't have to do it ourselves.
Oh, no, I've actually have met both of you, so I figured I would stop by and call and ask a question.
Oh, okay.
My sister's actually Alyssa Steinberg.
Hey!
Yes, you Psycho Philo?
Of course.
Which one? Yes. What?
She's a Psycho Philo. We went to the party about 2 years ago.
Do you remember at my house?
Yes.
Yes, and I'm the Eco brother, yes.
You're the Eco guy following the ground. I remember you. All right.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Hey, where are they now? We could do a where are they now for that party.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. We should. We wanted to actually do that again.
Right.
I speak to Alyssa online a lot.
Okay.
Yeah,
she's
I know.
Neat.
She's been telling me.
Yeah, she's neat.
Thanks for calling, man. It was a good question.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thanks, dude. See ya.
You too. Bye.
Huh. How about that? There you go.
What?
There you go. How about that?
Well, we can identify our callers by name. It's pretty bad.
Oh, it's a nice thing.
Well, it was a good question anyway. I mean, someone actually listened to the whole interview. Had a great, intelligent question. And now from there to potty mouth Christian
eco.
Bale. What? That's exactly
that's
right.
Eco.
All eco all the time here on Summertime.
It would be a better
here's
world.
Here's the music remix for Christian Bale as we wind down. There you go.
Yep. Nice, huh?
Almost 1 million views on YouTube for that. And
right,
we get one caller. We get one caller about special needs. That sums it up. What's to say?
Well, you know, I was watching Seinfeld before,
uh-huh.
and it was the one where that other comedian was, like, getting more laughs than him, and
uh-huh.
everybody around them just kept saying things like, I like not having to think. It's funny stuff, and I don't have to think. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I understand.
Nobody wants to think.
Hey, according to Dave Goodman, a resident neuropsychology guy, we're all just one big lobotomized culture sharing a brain like a bunch of freaking lemmings.
Great.
So, you know. So to sum up our hour here, talking about Alphabet Kids and all that, I figured a little Pink Floyd would be appropriate to understand. That's right.
All right.
There we go. Apparently we don't. And then Bob my eco head here. So next week we have no freaking clue who's coming on this dopey show. We have a couple of irons in the fire, as usually, and we'll pull something out of our butt by Sunday.
Yeah.
Or we'll just sit here and do this. Maybe we'll call random fast food joints.
That would be funny.
Yeah, it hasn't been done before.
And profile them on the phone.
Yeah,
I'm getting good at doing that.
Huh?
I'm getting good at doing that over the phone. That might be fun.
Oh, do it all the time. Excuse me, Nick, can I speak to your mother? Whatever the hell. What the hell are we doing here? God almighty.
I don't know.
All I know is, let's see. I saw it before, now I don't see it.
What are you looking for?
I'll find it, maybe. Is there anything in alphabetical order on this thing? Oh, there it is. I'll just take the advice here from Jim.
I tell you this, no eternal reward will forgive us now for wasting the dawn.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
President old bailout. Listen to that.
Oh, yes. I've read about that in the Bible.
That's right. So we'll see you next week, Travel Light Sapiens.
That's right.
Let the music play now, Val.
All right.
Ah! Everybody.